Everyone, thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. Today we have Russ. If you're in the retro gaming space, you'll know exactly who I'm talking about. If you aren't, Russ is a bit of a pioneer in the space. He's done many, many videos by this point, and it's really a privilege to have him here. So welcome, Russ.
Hi, thanks for having me. This is super cool. It's a great way to spend my morning. So
yeah, is there anything you want to just add to your intro? Tell people a little bit about yourself?
No, I mean, just, I run a website called Retro Game Core, and then it's also a YouTube channel. And initially, you know, it was supposed to be a YouTube or a website only, and then it turned into just mostly a YouTube channel now. And so I've been learning a lot about making videos, and it's been fun. So, yeah.
That's actually an interesting point, and I'll actually just start there quickly, is because I also started trying to do stuff on a website while I was doing the videos. And I also have a day job, as you did at the time when you started. And I'm finding it quite difficult to manage to do all of those things at the same time. So are you still maintaining the website? Is that still something that you're putting time into?
Yeah, but it's I'm very choosy about what I actually invest my time in on the website. And so not every device gets like a starter guide or anything like that. Like I'll kind of get a feel for how, for example, like the Palkitty X55 is a device that is really very similar to many other devices. However, it seems to be breaking out with a lot of people who don't know anything about retro handhelds. And so that device, I thought, okay, that one needs a starter guide. And so I spent the day, you know, making a written guide specifically for that one, because I felt like it needed a new audience, you know. But for other devices, yeah, I won't make like a website for them. And then a lot of times, you know, I have to just try to keep and maintain all the other ones too, which can be a pain when things get updated.
So I wanted to just start right at the beginning, you know, maybe tell us a little bit about how you got started. A lot of the guys who are in the space have watched all your like first videos. You know, that's how I got into it. I bought the RG350M after watching many retro game core videos, and I picked up a few little hints along the way of the fact that you did a few other things before this. And so you mentioned you started with, I don't know if this is the first thing you did, but you had a website for recipes.
It was so long ago, but yeah, I started in around 2010 with a food blog, and it was a few things going on in my life at the time. I was like a new dad, and also I was going through some health issues, and I fixed a lot of them by changing my diet and went like more gluten-free. And so I wanted to make a website as like an accountability tool to be like, hey, I'm doing this thing. And you know, here are some of the recipes I'm working on. And, I was a chef in restaurants like as a teenager and like in my early 20s before I joined the Navy. And so I was kind of going back to that stuff, you know. And it just kind of blew up. I started making like paleo style recipes, which is a diet that kind of became a fad for a bit. And so I got swept up in all of that, like, the faddishness of it, I guess. And so I got a cookbook deal out of it, and I wrote three books, and I ended up doing that for about 10 years. And right around to the start of the pandemic, that's when I kind of had stopped already. So.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You seem to be this sort of guy, like, it's weird because my wife and I also got into this sort of extreme diets on the one end of the scale. We were into like raw food only. Mm-hmm. And we also start a little blog and whatever, but you seem to be the sort of guy who takes a thing and really runs with it. And we chatted briefly on Discord at one point, and you mentioned the recipes, and I was like, that makes so much sense. Because you also mentioned in one or two of your videos right in the beginning. And I was like, it made so much sense because those initial videos felt a lot like you were putting a little recipe together for everyone to kind of, handle their new devices. That you definitely took that into it, didn't you?
Yeah, definitely. Like it's a concept, you know, when writing a recipe, it's the same idea. Is like you're taking somebody who, number one, you don't know what kind of kitchen they're in, right? And so they could have a variety of different tools at their like expense. And so it's like you have to figure out what's going to work for everybody. And writing a tech guide is very similar to that. You're starting from scratch. You don't know what kind of tools they're dealing with. And so you kind of have to walk them through everything. And so it was a very easy transition, you know, very step-by-step for making the guides, which I mostly focused on in the early days of my channel and website.
Yeah, that's actually something that I need to keep in mind again. It's something that I've kind of lost is, you know, remembering that a lot of the guys that start with these things just have no idea, you know. The retro gaming space is interesting because it's not hardcore gamers really, is it? It's just random guys that want to play games from the olden days.
Right. It's really just optimizing for casual gamers who just want to kind of recreate their like previous lives. You know, it's a nostalgia twinge thing as opposed to like the latest and greatest specs on, you know, whatever PC game. That kind of stuff is a little bit interesting to me, but I definitely just love finding various ways to play Mario.
Yeah. There was a one point where you were saying, oh, I'm just going to open, I think you still do it, where you're like, I'm just going to open a random game and it's always the same Mario game. I'm like that with Darkwing Duck. I got into this literally just to play the NES version of Darkwing Duck.
That's hilarious. I've never actually played that game. I played a lot of the like Disney games, but not that one.
Yeah, I was just really into the show when I was a kid. And the game was just so easy, and someone gave me the Famicom cartridge. I didn't have a lot of games, and so someone gave me that for my birthday or whatever. And I must have played it through four or five times and before I got bored of it. So it's just one of those games, just scratches an itch. Every time I play it, it just makes me happy, you know?
That's awesome.
I wanted to ask you, how did you get into retro? Like, I have a bit of like a retro gaming origin story, you know, I did this and I did that and I got into it. Do you have a little story like that?
Yeah, you know, so I played, you know, I grew up in the 80s, so we had an NES and then we didn't get a Super Nintendo, but we had a Genesis and then like Sega CD and even 32X once it like went on clearance. And so that was the extent of my gaming background, you know. I had a lot of siblings, so I'm one of five kids. And so we're always fighting for attention with the television and trying to play games and stuff. And so by the time like the next generation came out, Nintendo 64, PlayStation and stuff, I had already kind of grown out of video games. I was, you know, a teenager at that point, really into sports and, you know, girls, things like that. And so I didn't really spend a lot of time with video games after that until much later in life. You know, I ended up picking up, over the years, I would pick up like a PlayStation at like a pawn shop, play a couple games, but never really got into it until the like Xbox 360 era. At that point, I was just in a portion of my life where I had a good amount of downtime. And so it was a good time to kind of get into video games again. And so I got into Xbox 360 for a bit. And then from there, I just kind of was very casual. Like I would just wait for the AAA releases, you know, play maybe three or four games through a year. You know, that was kind of the way I would do it. And it wasn't until the pandemic when I was stuck at home with a lot of time on my hands that I got back into like retro gaming, because I had played through a few PS4 games and I was like, okay, I'm bored with this now. Yeah. And so that's when I started getting into the idea of like a retro handheld, and I picked up my first one then.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and it still is, but it was such a hobby thing, wasn't it? Because most of these games arrived almost broken, you know, and then we had to fix them.
Yeah, that was the thing is I got the RG350 was like the first one I got, and there was information out there on the internet about it, like how to set it up, but it was scattered all over the place. You know, there was one dev would work on something, one dev would work on the other, and also, like a lot of it was very kind of like desire driven, where whatever the devs wanted to work on, they would work on, but there was nothing putting it all together. And so that was the idea for starting Retro Game Core, was to start a website that would compile all that data together for the RG350 in particular, because I had such a hard time setting it up. I knew that others were going to as well, but I really enjoyed the hardware. And so I wanted people to kind of have an easier entry into it than I did. And so that's when I started the website. And then I quickly learned that other people, you know, in the new YouTube era, people want to see the tutorial. They don't want to just read it. And so that's when I started making videos too, to help start set things up.
Yes.
And so, yeah, the videos just kind of took over. So,
yeah, I think you gained a lot of sort of social cachet from that, because things were so scattered, and they are kind of still, but I just remember reading your websites and using your videos and just being so grateful that someone had brought this seeming mess of things together and made sense of it, you know? It's not so much like that anymore. There's a lot of things that I'd noticed towards I don't know, the beginning of last year, maybe, where I'd noticed, you know, you'd start saying things like, this is great, but go over to so-and-so and they've got a really great written guide on this, you know, and it started to get a bit better. But I think you, and you still, you've got a such a strong following because of that, because I think guys just bought into what you were doing. And still, you know, like, if you say anything about Retro Game Core on Discord or whatever, it's all positive. You know, everyone's like, oh yeah, that guy's done so much for me. It's you know, so I think that's where your success lies, is those moments, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's something that it's very tempting to just do review videos all the time, because I have such a stack of them to review, and there's always an urgency. People want to know what I think about whatever device and whatnot. But I have to force myself to pause and work on guides. And so, because I don't want to lose that aspect of being helpful for others and for newcomers in particular. And so, I get it. Everyone wants to know how well this device works or whatever, but I'm going to take a pause here and there and work on a guide instead. And so that's why you'll see kind of that variety of content on my website and YouTube channel, because I won't go away from those guides at any point.
Yeah, I'm going to jump ahead a bit, because it kind of just sparked that. I think, I don't know if I, because now I've done two interviews. I did one with Joey and one with Shem, and we spoke about you. And I've been talking to a lot of YouTubers, and I noticed that it seems to attract a lot of people with sort of ADHD. But you're not one of those people. You seem to have, firstly, an incredible work ethic, and you just seem to pump out content like it's nobody's business. Now, like, where does that come from? And like, what does your day look like in terms of, okay, now I'm just being selfish. I just want to know how you structure your life so that I can do the same. But, you know, do you struggle with that flow of constantly pushing out content? Because it seems, from the outside, it just seems so effortless. It just seems like, you know, Retro Game Core is literally that, a company of a whole bunch of people doing videos, because that's what it feels like sometimes with you. And yeah, so yeah, maybe just speak a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it is complex. I think a lot of the work ethic comes from, I was in the military for 22 years. And of that time, you know, I got lucky in many ways that I ranked up really fast. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I was at the 15-year mark in the military, I was at the highest rank that I could attain, which is E9 or Master Chief, within my specialty. And so I became very highly functional, you know, like to the point where, you know, I was in charge of thousands of people every day. And at that level, like, you just, I don't know, there's just an ability, you learn to just turn that on switch on and then focus and just kind of keep going. And so I haven't turned it off yet, you know, since the moment I retired and started transitioning out, I've just been keeping that same work ethic. So that's helped, you know, but that was definitely a trained thing. Like, it took many, many years of me being lazy before I got to that point, you know. But the other part is that it's all about the timing of the release of my content. And so, for example, I have a goal of posting 3 videos a week. I could probably do 4, you know, but I would probably cut into the quality of it. Yeah. And then I would also start burning myself out. And it took a while for me to find that balance of just how much downtime I need versus how much time I need working. And it's hard. It is a struggle on my end to remain relevant, to keep ahead of everybody else. I'm seeing a lot of channels popping up all the time, and I love it. But at the same time, it also, you know, there is somewhat a limited audience. And so I want to make sure I continue to stay ahead and keep people's attention, you know, all those kind of things, without resorting to being clickbaity, because I don't want to ever compromise my integrity in that regard. And so it's been a struggle, you know, for that stuff, but it really does come down to a lot of hustle. Like, I keep telling my wife, I'm like, listen, this is a temporary thing. Like, I'm not going to be spending 1 million hours a week all the time on YouTube, but I feel like I do need to do this now while the fire's hot. And then I will, you know, back off at some point once I'm a little bit more comfortable. The problem is I'm like insatiable. And so I never get to that point where I'm like, okay, now I can relax. Yeah. And so, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's really just, it's keeping that switch on and keeping going. But then I also have a lot of downtime, you know, like last night is a good example, or the day before yesterday, I was working on a device, the Loki Zero, which is like a budget-based handheld PC. And I was kind of watching the space and I saw that really no one had made like an in-depth review yet. And so I'm like, okay, well, I want to be the first in the world to make this, you know? And so I pushed through for about 3 days straight making this video, you know, losing sleep. I mean, one night I even slept here in the studio just because I was having internet issues, and there was all sorts of reasons. But anyway, I really pushed hard and released the video on time, at least in my internal schedule. And then yesterday I didn't do anything. Like I just, you know, I slept in, hung out with the family, you know, did all that stuff to just kind of recalibrate. And so you might see it as, yes, Russ is always putting out videos, but what you're not seeing is like the hem and haw on my end of like the kind of seesaw like approach that I have, where I work really hard and then I'll take a day off and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's insane. It's it's quite a transition you made from what you were doing in the military to this. It's strange even. And I mean, how does it feel to come from that? I mean, you said you had thousands of people, you know, that you're responsible for. I wasn't aware of that. Like, so how, you know, how did it feel retiring and then just being Russ working in his studio every day?
Yeah, it's been an interesting transition, you know, going from being surrounded by, you know, thousands of people every day to this YouTube existence, which is really kind of a solitary kind of work, you know. Like I used to be, you know, where I was in a position where many of the things that would happen in my life would just happen to me because I was surrounded by other people, and just the dynamic of like having kind of that, you know, communication with other people. Now it's very deliberate. I have to make the time to see the people that I care about. You know, my family, obviously I see them all the time, but with friends, I have to like book it in a calendar now, which is just kind of crazy. And a couple months back, I met up with a friend and we spent the whole time talking about them and whatnot, and which was great. Like I wanted to catch up with him, but I did notice that like he wasn't asking any questions about me. And he mentioned at some point, he's like, you know, I watch your videos all the time. I know exactly what's going on with your life, Russ. And I was just like, that's crazy. Cause even when I like go on a vacation now, I'm making a video about it when I get back. And so, it's been a really interesting thing where it's kind of a one-sided conversation sometimes, where I forget that there are other people on the other end who are learning about me. But I still crave like, you know, hearing about others and getting to know other people and stuff. And so, that's been an interesting transition here, and it's been kind of rough. You know, I was just, you know, I lived a life where I expected one certain kind of thing, whereas I could see people, I would be recognized by my rank and status, you know, based on my uniform and whatnot. All that's gone. Mm. Nobody knows any of that stuff anymore. And it's kind of funny now, you know, I'll walk past somebody who's very junior, you know, early in the military. And I just think to myself, I'm like, they have no idea that I like have already gone through all that stuff. And it's just kind of cool. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting to me. Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I've picked up on a few similarities of the things we've been through, but that part of your life is just completely foreign to me. It's really interesting. But then, so I just sort of, I feel like you're going through another transition now because your channel has grown significantly. So like, to be honest, since I started making videos, I stopped watching your videos because I noticed in the beginning, I felt like I was maybe copying you, not on purpose, but you know, it just, I was watching your videos, then I would pick up a device and I'd end up with the same opinion as you, which obviously I didn't want to do. And so I stopped watching your videos and then I checked in again, like after a year, and I was like, oh my gosh, Russ is, I don't know. I don't know how many subscribers you had when I started watching you, but it's really, I don't know what your metrics are, but it seems to be growing faster and faster and faster. And so, I don't know, are you noticing a bit more of like a critical eye on you now that you're becoming a bit of a bigger YouTuber?
Yeah, you know, I get a lot of, I like to call it like the riffraff, you know, people who are just kind of doing a drive-by, they find my video and then they judge my videos based on their expectations as a YouTube viewer watching like whatever content's out right now. And so I'm getting a lot of feedback from people who maybe don't understand the space, don't know any about that kind of stuff, which is all great. Like I always want to make it very friendly for newcomers. Mm. But I do find myself being judged on things that are not important to me. And so, you know, people complaining about my videos are too long or whatever. It's like, that's my thing, man. I will make the video as long as it needs to be to tell the story. Right. And so they'd be like, I can't believe you made a review video that's 40 minutes long. I'm like, dude, 3 years ago, I made a review video that was 50 minutes long. Like, I've never changed any of that stuff, you know? And so that has been an adjustment. I will say from the metrics side, things are slowing down. Like, it may look like I'm growing a lot, but I am not hitting the same metrics that I was maybe even a year ago in terms of just the amount of new subscribers a day. I think I'm hitting a saturation point in the content that I'm making. There's only so many people in the world that are interested in this specific thing. And so I'm good with that. I knew it was going to slow down at some point. You know, there's definitely a finite number of people who want to watch my videos. And it's one of those things where you kind of have to like not let it hit the ego. You know, you get to the point, just the human reaction, where you get used to a certain amount of success and that becomes the norm. And then it's all of a sudden, if you get anything less than that, you start to feel like you're failing. And so that's the thing I had to contend with as it started to slow down a bit. I was like, oh no, like maybe I'm doing something wrong. Mm. And I had to kind of make a reassessment, like, I'm still making the videos I want to watch, which is always what it's been about. And so in that regard, it's just a matter of kind of finding the right audience.
Yeah, and it does make you kind of think where to from here. I don't know if that's kind of crosses your mind every day. I tend to think too far in the future. So, I mean, I only have like 8,500 subscribers and I'm already thinking, okay, when I hit 300,000, what am I going to do then? You know, like, I don't know if that kind of crosses your mind.
Yeah, I definitely, I think of it in a timeline kind of thing as opposed to milestones. So I told my wife when I first retired, I said, give me 5 years. Let me do this for 5 years and I'm going to push as hard as I can and we'll see what happens after that. And so for me, it's never been about reaching a subscriber or view milestone. It's more about what can I do to sustain this for a good 5 years and what'll come after that. I don't want to be an old man making YouTube videos because I think the work cycle is a little bit rough, you know? And so I don't want to do that when I'm old. So I do have to figure out some sort of transition at some point. But again, I think that's for a topic for another day. You know, I've still got 4 years remaining in the 5 years when I asked my wife, you know, to start doing this. And so a lot of things will change in that time frame.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's switch gears. So what is your, I think I know the answer to this, but what is your favorite retro system, like N64, NES?
Yeah. So definitely the NES, you know, it's always been like my bread and butter. Mm. That was the first console we had at the house. Mm. It's the one where we had the most games for, you know, we were right there in that heyday of the NES system here in the US. And so we could go to Blockbuster or a video rental place, get one for 99 cents on a Wednesday and not have to turn it in until that following Monday often. And so we get a good amount of time with these rental games. And so it's always been my favorite system. I feel like that's the catalog I know the best. You know, I probably played through at least half the catalog on NES. Maybe not played through, but at least experienced those games. Yeah. And then, you know, after that we had the Genesis, but you know, I started to grow out of video games at that point. So when I do play games, like if I'm just going to sit back and enjoy myself and I want to play a retro game, it often will be an NES game and often one I've already played before, just because I want to kind of have that feeling again of, oh, I remember this game from back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Like me and Darkwing Duck. Just such a random game, but I just love it. I put a little thing on YouTube and I said, so what do you guys want me to ask Russ? And there's some interesting questions, but I think you mentioned in your, I did watch your Loki Zero, because I've set myself a cap. I've said to myself, everything over $250, I'm not going to make videos about. I need to keep it because I'm only getting a certain amount of money in for the channel. And so I'm doing sub 250 devices, you know? Mm. So for me, the Loki Zero is like right on that limit. And you mentioned in that the RetroPocket 3 Plus is kind of your go-to favorite device. But I always watch your update videos from your holidays and that, and the Steam Deck is your device, isn't it? Like the device that you would take with you everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, it really depends. I don't actually play retro games on my Steam Deck. I just don't think the controls really match very well for like playing, say, for example, a Super Nintendo game. For that, I would rather play on the Retroid Pocket 3 Plus or the RG405M. Like between those two, I'm just kind of split, you know. I've really found that I kind of change which game I'm playing depending on the device. So if it's a widescreen capable game, you know, something like PlayStation Portable or one of those lightweight Switch games, then I'm going to play the Retroid Pocket 3 Plus. But if it's going to be like a, you know, an NES game, for example, I usually will do the RG405M because of that 4:3 aspect ratio. And so I'm in a very lucky position where I can make those choices, you know. Yeah. But yeah, definitely, I kind of favor those two right now. I'd really love to have something with that amount of power with a Linux backend, but we're just not there yet. And then the Steam Deck is really there for me to do light PC gaming, and then like GameCube and above. Like I'll play all of those on the Steam Deck just so I don't have to deal with like stutters and tweaks and all that other kind of stuff.
Tweaking, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so it's interesting. Well, I think too far in the future, but... do you think Windows is the future? Because I know a lot of guys love Linux. I like Android purely because I can put my wireless headphones on. I don't know. I feel like there is sort of a cap to this whole little retro gaming industry, but I feel like people are going to evolve eventually into Windows. What do you think?
Yeah, it's none of these systems are perfect. You know, Android makes a lot of sense right now because of the battery life with the ARM architecture, but there's a limit to what emulators in particular will work on Android. And so that can affect things as well in the sense that like, you can get a handheld that's powerful enough to be able to play like Wii U games, but there's no Wii U emulator on Android. And so you start to get limited by the architecture itself. Windows doesn't have that kind of limitation. However, it has the hardware limitation of being x86, which was never developed to be mobile in the first place. And so it eats through a battery really quickly. They've managed that pretty well with laptops by putting big honking batteries inside, but that becomes an issue with a handheld. And so the future, the way I would love it to be, is that if ARM-based Windows, which has been a thing for like Windows Surface tablets forever, if that actually got a good amount of development where we had something that was both efficient and also Windows-friendly, then that would be the best of both worlds, at least from my perspective. And so we could get to ARM architecture and it'd be portable and, yeah, exactly. And so that's what kind of what I'm hoping for, but I don't think that the demand is enough to basically reshape the industry. And so we're going to be stuck with x86. And so at that point, it really comes down to software efficiencies. And, you know, something like SteamOS or Linux-based ones are really good at managing that because they don't have to deal with the overhead of running a whole operating system like Windows. And so that may be the future. I think x86 is probably going to be where it's at. But until there's some sort of huge advancement in battery or cooling technology, we're going to be dealing with the battery life issue with those kind of handhelds.
Yeah, which actually, you know, those kind of things, I like that because it keeps things interesting. And we what you're saying is we're stuck for a while with people choosing between Linux, Android, and Windows, you know, which is great. Because we're at this point, I feel like, you know, Linux for the 16 bits and we can get more powerful stuff, but it's there. And then Android for that sort of middle of the range. And then for the really powerful stuff, we have Windows. So it's a nice ecosystem that we're in, I think.
The only other thing I thought about is that, yes, you know, as we get more powerful ARM processors coming out, if there is one where the ARM chip manufacturer, like Qualcomm or whoever, make it friendly for Windows or for Linux, where they create the drivers and everything else so that people can use that architecture with a high powered Linux device, that could be that bridge as well, right? So for example, something that could play, you know, Bodicera or Jealous, but on ARM architecture that's very powerful, that would overcome all those issues we're having with ARM-based Windows. And so, but the problem is that the those chip manufacturers are so focused on Android that they don't, like, Linux is a very secondary market to them. And so it's only like the very small and cheap manufacturers that provide all those sources. So something like MediaTek, which is the main manufacturer of all of these devices, the RG, whatever, those are all coming from MediaTek chips. And so until we get to a point where there's a meeting of those, something that's very powerful on ARM, and they have all the drivers and sources available for the community, yeah, we're kind of stuck with these cheaper, low-powered handhelds.
Yeah, we were heading there. I don't know if you remember, but they were busy developing a phone for Ubuntu. They were busy developing like a Linux phone, and that would have pushed things in that direction, but that flopped. Mm-hmm. So we never ended up with that being developed. It sounds like you're really busy with all this, but do you have any hobbies that you do, things that you do to get your mind off everything?
Yeah, I've always, music has always been a huge part of my life. I played in bands, as a teenager and whatnot. You got to imagine, so I'm originally from the Seattle area, right? And I grew up, in Seattle area, like during the time where everything was breaking. So like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, all that stuff was like part of like my childhood, in a very visceral way. And so music has always been a part of that. I started making bands, and things like that. And so I'm still in a band now. We have no ambitions of, becoming rich and famous rock stars or anything, but we do get together once or twice a week and work on music. We've been working on material now for about a year. We were a band together years and years ago. Mm. Like I'm talking like 20 years ago, I met these guys, and then maybe 15 years ago, we were in a band, we made an album, but then we moved away from Hawaii. And so the band kind of broke up, and then we just basically got back together this past year. And so this has been one of those things where I have to force a social situation where I actually go out and see people and whatnot. And so we get together once or twice a week and write music, and we're hoping to start recording a new album by the end of this year. Again, no ambitions other than just to make some good music. But yeah, that's the majority of my time is spent listening to or creating music. And then I like watching movies too. I'm a big film guy. And so those are like my two things.
Okay. Yeah, I live in, well, so do you, but my little town is like a trail running mecca. Like people come from all over to run our trails and cycle our trails. So I'm big into that. But I actually forgot that was one of the other things that we have in common is, I've been heavy into music my whole life as well. I had so I grew up in Cape Town, which is further south in South Africa. Yeah, there was just a huge music buzz, and I've been into it ever since. So I also try to write songs. I love writing songs, but I just don't get the time anymore.
Yeah, it's one of those where I have to force it. Like if it wasn't for my bandmates and whatnot, I wouldn't be as much into music again, And to be fair, I'm the bass player in this band. So I can't sing and play bass at the same time. And so I don't do any singing. I don't really do a lot of songwriting. I do a lot of the arrangement for the band. And so, I kind of help them build the song after their ideas and whatnot. But I'm not quite like into the whole like creative part as opposed to the two guitar players and singers, because they mostly take on that brunt, which is great because I could just back them up and be a part of that. Because I don't think I would have the bandwidth like in my head to be able to create an album right now. Like I just got so much going on that it's just not a good place to be really creative.
Yeah, it's difficult. So my work is creative. I make videos, and then I make videos on YouTube as well. So it gets too much to just constantly create, it does get tricky. I wanted to ask you, I'm sure you've, like you said, you have experienced, as you grow, you have a bit of criticism and people who just say weird things. What are the worst YouTube comments you've had?
It's funny. I get a similar pattern of comments often. So I often will get people telling me that I am Jesse Eisenberg, the actor. They're like, "Hey, I because from my voice, I guess." They're like, "Oh, you sound like the guy from Social Network, And I'm like, or Zombieland, and I'm like, "How is everyone coming up with that?" Like, I don't hear it at all. But a lot of people say that comment, which isn't a bad comment. I just find that to be funny all the time. I get a lot of people giving me comments, and most of it's pretty
No, I just said he is a cool guy. Like, it's not like you being insulted or anything, but I also don't see the connection really. Like, I've never listened to your videos or whatever and thought, oh, that guy, yeah. No, it's just not.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it was definitely an odd thing, you know, when people bring up the Jesse Eisenberg thing. It's just like, I don't know, I don't get it. I need to get in the same room with him, I guess. But the other comments I get a lot, and they're usually trying to be constructive, are that people will say, you know, hey, you're saying this word too much or whatever. And I appreciate all that feedback. The thing with my process is that I don't script anything. You know, I do my voiceover ad hoc, like just as I'm watching my own video, as I've, you know, what I'll do is I'll record, you know, 20 hours of footage. I'll cut it all up and kind of create what I want to talk about. Uh-huh. And then I'll play that while talking about it as I'm watching it. And that's kind of my process. And when I do that, like, I don't want to write anything down because it takes away, like, it just feels too prepared. And what I'm trying to do is talk about the experience of that. And so I want to just say what comes to mind. That does lead me to say things like more often than I would like. Like, I don't notice it when I'm recording it. I'll say the word here too many times. And when I start editing down, I'm like, oh gosh, I can hear that, you know. And sometimes I'll cut that word out, or if I can, you know, I'll cut it out of the dialogue, but it's very difficult to still keep that natural flow. And so I get it. Like, there's this weird mix where people are very used to scripted, like, methodical videos. And I try to do that as much as I can, but I'm also doing it off the top of my head, and it's a compromise there. And so I get a lot of comments about that. And I don't mind it. Again, it's something that helps me recognize it and work better towards, but I rarely get mean comments. You know, I'll get them sometimes, you know, but it's never that bad. You know, the one thing that, like, I used to get a lot of comments about was when I would, like you mentioned before, my joke with Mario 3, where I'd be like, hey, I'm going to play this game. I've never played it before, but let's just try this one out. And every time it would be Mario 3, you know, and I started pretending that that game didn't exist. Like, it was always a brand new game by an indie developer or whatever. And I get so many comments, but like, this fool, like, he thinks he has a retro gaming channel and doesn't know what Mario 3 is, you know. For a while I was replying, I'm like, that's a joke, you know. But I just stopped at some point. And so that was fun. Like, I was creating those comments on purpose. And so that was another one that was pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. You tend to do, like, sleeper jokes. Like, you just say a thing and you just carry on. I can't remember reference now, my brain, but I just remember watching your videos and, like, I'd been watching a lot of your content, and then you'd say something and you kind of get to know your sort of rhythm and your cadence. And then I'm laughing to myself and I'm thinking, so many people probably just missed that. But, I feel like the, you know, like you mentioned saying here, that's kind of part of your whole thing. Like, I was watching the Loki video, and you'll say, like, and this is a thing that happens here, and then you move on, and it's very much a retro game core thing, and I don't know, I don't think it's a negative at all, but you've kind of blown my mind now, because, like, when I started out, I thought, okay, how am I going to set myself apart? Okay, everybody's scripted, including Russ. I'm going to go totally off the cuff. Now you're telling me you're not scripted at all.
Yeah, it's a really interesting way of looking at it. Like, I want to change my editing process, the way I make videos, because it's a very long process. The way you can imagine, like, I record all the footage. That takes me 20 plus hours. Then I record my voiceover. And even for a 30-minute video, it'll take me maybe 2 hours to record that voiceover, because I'm formulating my thoughts as I'm talking, which means that I will say 4 bad things before I say the one paragraph that makes sense to me, you know? And so it's a lot of repetition, kind of finding that pace and the rhythm and what I want to say and when, and I do it all on the fly. And again, I think that's part of that creative process. Like, the magic won't happen if I write it down first. But, you know, I want to change that editing process because it takes forever. Once I add all that together, it's another 8-hour marathon editing session, syncing up the video with the audio, you know? And so I've been talking to, you know, editors and whatnot, people who, a lot of people volunteer to say, hey, we want to help you out, you know, that kind of thing. You know, obviously I would pay them and whatnot. And I feel like I'm at that point where I probably need to start offloading some of that work so that I can make better and more content. But I don't want to change that process. Like, it's a very unique way that I approach it. It's almost like a documentary style thing. And like, I've, if you watch a documentary, you see they're recording hours and hours and hours of footage. And then later on, they put it together and then they put that voiceover over where it's like they're telling the story finally. But you have to get to that point first. You have to watch the lion in the jungle for 30 hours before you understand it. And then you can put it together and tell the story. If you try to write your story ahead of time and then make the footage match that, it's not going to be genuine. And so my process is very painstaking. It takes forever for me to do a review. But I don't think I can change that. Like I am a reaction documentary, like kind of video creator in the sense that I react to the experience that happens to me. Mm. And I have to have that experience in order to talk about it. And I can't just talk about it before I have the experience. And so I don't know. I'm at a cusp where I need to make a change, but I'm not sure how, other than just getting really efficient in my own process.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, because that is where we are different, is I speak as I do, which I like. That's, for me, it just works. But if you change that aspect of what you're doing, it's going to change the whole rhythm of Retro Game Core. So it's difficult. Probably the only thing you can really change is just have someone edit for you, and that will save you some time.
Right. Yeah, that's the one thing I've thought about, is like getting somebody to help me with that very last 8-hour marathon. Once I've basically, because at that point, it's really just cleaning up. Mm. I almost think that AI will maybe be able to help me pretty successfully in the future, in terms of like, you know, if I say the same thing 4 times, but you know, the fourth one is the one I'm going to keep, then AI should be able to say, okay, like get rid of all the other ones, you know? And so that's what I'm hoping at some point, because I don't want to subject a poor person to having to do that either, you know? And so we'll see how it goes. Yeah, I definitely have some ideas in mind. It's just a matter of kind of adapting to how things work.
Yeah, I was just, because I kind of know how, so DaVinci Resolve has an AI feature now, but it won't work with the way that you work. So you've kind of how it'll work is you would have your audio, you'd have your video, but the audio and the video need to be the same. Then you sync those up and then it'll cut out dead space. And that's kind of where the technology is right now. But it can only be one track. So for me, it doesn't work because I use multiple angles. For you, because you are doing a voiceover, it's not going to work. So good luck.
We'll get there at some point. Yeah. For now, you know, I don't mind that process. It's one of those where it's just kind of a relaxing part of my rhythm, where I know I've got to do that marathon session at some point. And so that'll be like my evening is doing that. You know, I'll grab a beer or whatever and just kind of enjoy that evening of doing that. And it's a little bit mind numbing, but yeah, I've gotten pretty efficient at it as well.
I think you watched a little bit of my video with Shem, and, I had a little chuckle to myself because you said you kind of felt weird hearing your name. And I thought to myself, what's wrong with Russ? Like, he's like the guy, like he's the famous retro YouTuber. So did you feel like you're never going to get used to that?
Yeah, it's been interesting. You know, I never set out to like kind of make a name for myself, you know, in this whole space. I really was just trying to help out other people. It's been weird to like, just kind of have this brush with, I don't want to call it fame, you know, but whatever it is, like micro fame and, or nano fame, but it's been interesting, you know, just kind of, kind of dealing with that. The thing is, it is a very virtual thing. I am not walking down the street and people saying, hey, it's Russ from Retro Game Core. You know, like that is never happening at all, know? And I don't know if it ever would get to that point. It's a unique thing. And I have to say, you know, admittedly, it's not my first time kind of having that kind of recognition. You know, when I was an author, one of my books did get pretty popular, you know, it got on like a lot of the bestseller lists and whatnot. And I did book tours and stuff. So, I had an audience at that point as well. And I honestly took a lot of the tools I learned from like managing social media from that period when I started up Retro Game Core. So, I don't know. I don't really like the spotlight part of things, you know, but it's just kind of a necessary evil, I think, in just trying to get the word out, you know, trying to get retro handhelds to get a bigger audience. You know, I think it's just a really fun concept. There are so many people like you and I who want to play these devices and just don't even know they exist yet. And so that's all I'm trying to do in a lot of my videos, is trying to say, look at how cool this stuff is and look at what you can do. And that's one of the biggest things I've always kind of felt is like the reason for my channel is that you get a lot of people who will make videos and it's and the idea behind it, and it's whether it's intentional or not, is look at what I did, look at what I can do. You know, I created this table out of, you know, one piece of wood or whatever, and that's amazing. Me, I want to say, look at what you can do. Like, look at what we can do together, kind of thing. And that's always been my idea about it. It's a very group-minded, kind of community-minded way of doing things. And that's a better fit for me. And so if I have to be the representative of that community or just kind of be the face or whatever, like, fine, I'm good with that. You know, it's one of the reasons why I even did a face reveal in the first place, you know, because for the first year or so of the channel, I didn't show my face at all. And but there's some point where I was like, you know what, let's personalize this channel and make it, you know, that I actually have a face and I'm a real person. And so that's when I started doing all that as well. It's a weird thing. You know, I'm kind of a private guy in the grand scheme of things, but yeah, I'm taking it in stride.
Yeah, I think representative is a good word, because I don't know. I don't feel like there's, I don't know, maybe you'll know better than me, but I don't feel like there's anyone who's gotten into the space as a you know, to crazy competitive, gonna crush Russ from Retro Game Corps. There's, I don't really feel like there's anyone in the space like that. And I must say, like, and that's probably where you got uncomfortable listening to the podcast with Shem, is just, I think if there were going to be someone to pioneer this thing, I'm glad it was you, you know, because you've put a lot of good energy out there. There's a lot of YouTubers riding, like, truth time. Like, I made a video recently, and it was not clickbait. I sent it out to a few YouTuber friends, and I said, like, is this too sensationalist and all this? And I made a video saying Wolf Den was wrong, and I used, and I tried to reach out to Bob, but he didn't get my message. But I was just saying, you know, it's all in good fun. I'm just, you know, kind of playing the YouTube game. But I just don't think I have the constitution for it, because I don't know. It's a hard thing to do. What I'm trying to say is it puts a bad energy out there, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, things are very unique in our space. We don't have like beef. I don't, you know, like there's YouTube feuds and things like that. And I just learned about this stuff recently. I didn't watch YouTube at all until I started my own channel. Like I had an account and I maybe subscribed to like five people, and they were like my friends, you know, to see like videos of their kids or whatever, you know? And so I definitely didn't understand the whole YouTube game or that whole social media construct of it. It just wasn't really my thing. But I am learning a little bit about it now. I watched your video about the Bob Wolf thing, and I 100% understood where you're coming from. It was just kind of like, hey, like this is one person's take on it, and here's mine, you know, and that's it. And it was, and it was totally like in fun. Like I saw it in no way was it like beef, right? Like the way that I think about it with other YouTubers and whatnot. Yeah. And so I loved it. It got me to click on it. So well done in that regard. And so, and I think that was kind of the point of it. And so, you just really disguised an RG405M versus RP3 plus video with a different title is really what it was. And I think that was great.
Yes. But the thing is, it upsets guys. I think it's just because we're in a space where no one's doing that. And so, you know, someone was like, I disagree. The title does not match up with the content. I hate you kind of thing. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm in 2 months because it did work. Like it's one of my highest performing videos in the last month. So I don't know. And the reason I did it was because the RG405M was old already by the time I made the video. And I thought, how can I spice this up a bit, you know, as opposed to my usual. But then again, the dry, just straightforward stuff does well as well. So we'll see. We'll see what I do in the future.
Yeah, I think that honestly, it was a good tactic because like you mentioned, the device had been out for a while and it is hard to kind of create something new in that space. I had a similar issue, you know, where I wanted to make an update to my Xbox emulation video, and I released it last week, and I didn't know how to title it, because I was like, I've already done that video like 2 years ago, but this is an update. But I don't want to write just the word update, because I think that it is really... that's too much of a title. That's requiring people to understand what happened before and then also now watch the video. And that's going to drive down the number of people who are interested in clicking on it. And so instead I titled it and I just said, Xbox emulation is still awesome. And that's all I wrote, you know, and I think that covered everything. It was the update part. It was the fact that, yes, I'm acknowledging this is an older idea, but that it's still relevant right now. And so I'd spent a lot of time thinking about that one little sentence, but that's the kind of thing you have to do if it's not going to be name of device review, you know, like that's all I really did in the Loki Zero video, because I knew it was going to be the first one that's out. And so I just said Loki Zero review. And then I think I said finally a budget handheld PC, and that was it. And so it really depends on where you have to anticipate your audience, and that's part of that YouTube game I don't like playing, but all the same, it's kind of a requirement just because of the way that everything is structured around us.
Yeah. And you talk about YouTube beefs, so I've been doing this. So I recently found out I have ADHD, which is just a strange thing to be diagnosed when you're 43 years old. So that's kind of my excuse for kind of messing around for as long as I have. So I've been on YouTube for a long time and I keep darting around from one thing to the next. And I was into drones and that was doing quite well. And had I kept going up, I probably would have done quite well. But the reason I got out of it was the toxic community that was around it. It's just so strange, you know, and that's why when I started to see success with these videos, so I've been making lots of videos, and then you'll see my first RG350M video, and then I saw it got a decent amount of views, and I thought, everyone's so nice here. It's such a nice bunch of guys. You know, I reached out to Stubbs, I messaged you, I was like, wow, this big guy's like chatting to me, and I thought, what a nice community, you know. So I think I need to tread lightly with the sensationalist stuff, because I think it's a unique community, let's put it that way. Yeah,
absolutely. This is a great place to be. And I will say that you mentioned about you thinking about getting into the Windows handheld space. PC gamers are a rough bunch. And so those kind of comments have definitely been creeping into my channel over the past year or two. And I have to kind of, I have to temper it. That I have various people watching my videos, and I have those PC gamers, and I have my retro gamers, and they don't see eye to eye, which is funny because, like, in my comment section, you'll see like people getting into arguments and whatnot because they have completely different outlooks on what things matter. You know, it's not a numbers game. You know, more numbers doesn't mean a better experience.
That's
crazy. There's other people who are more interested in the experience, and so that's one of those things. Just beware that if you do start covering Windows handhelds, you're going to bring in that PC gamer comments, which are not quite as friendly as the retro guys. So,
yeah, because I saw that a little bit with touching into Bob Wolf's community is just they said some mean stuff about Bob. I posted it on Reddit, and immediately people just started complaining about him. I was like, geez, you haven't even watched the video clearly, because that's not what the video is about. So. Yeah, it's, you know, you're going to get it everywhere, but I think YouTube has also helped a lot with sorting that out. There was a period where the comments in YouTube was brutal. I follow a female tech reviewer, her name's iJustine, and there was a time where she was nearly about to quit. I mean, she's got over 1 million subscribers now, but I don't know where she was, but she was a lot smaller. And she nearly quit because of how brutal it was. But I think YouTube have fixed that, you know.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I mean, it's one of those where I still do read every comment. I don't respond to everybody, but I do try to keep up with the comment feed, and I read it throughout the day. You know, I'll just check in a few times a day because I'm looking for that feedback and just to see how people react to it. But yeah, it would be hard if there was more negativity in those comments to read through it. I know a lot of YouTubers just don't read anymore. They don't read their comments for their own mental health, which is kind of crazy, but
yes.
It's just kind of, It's the internet world we live in, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, mental health's it's a big one. Like I said, a lot of YouTubers I'm finding are struggling with ADHD, and they tend to be more sensitive human beings. And so I check in with guys and they're like, yeah, I'm having a bit of a rough time. I'm taking a break. And it's hard. It's not easy to just keep going. That's why I asked you that question. How do you just maintain that? And you didn't really help my question, because it just seems like you're some kind of superhuman that just keeps going.
It's all about context. You know, I definitely need to have my times off. You know, even, you know, later this week, I'm actually going on a vacation with my wife for a few days, going to Vegas. And so we find ways to unplug, to be able to keep our sanity, you know, and it's all about just keeping that content going. You know, like, I've been working extra hard this past week, so that videos will release while I'm gone, and people won't even notice that I took a break. And so that's kind of that part of that rhythm for me, is just kind of thinking through, scheduling, being methodical about when I'm going to create something and why. And often, sometimes it requires me to just give up on, you know, like, a good example is I went on vacation last month before to Southeast Asia, and I was gone for 2 weeks, and I only had a couple videos come out during that time, but enough to keep the channel going, you know. When I got back, I said, hey, here are like the 8 things I got in the mail, and then let me know which ones you want me to work on. And of those 8 things, I think I only made videos on 3 of them. And that's because I can't do it all, you know? And so I just have to kind of give up at some point and say, you know what, this video is not going to happen. Either it's too late at this point, it's not relevant anymore, or I didn't find enough interesting things to make it an enjoyable experience for the viewer. And so that's one of the things too, is I kind of have to be choosy about what content I create. Basically the things that excite me and the things that I think will excite other people. And it does require me to make mistakes here and there, buying something and then realizing I'm not actually going to use that. Now I've got like a stack of these things that I just, I don't know, give them away to friends and things like that.
Yeah, it is a struggle. I struggle with that. I struggle with that waste. Like, I bought the Mini Mini Plus and I've made one video about it, and I think to myself, that video did so well, I need to make another one, but I just haven't got back to it. So it is difficult.
I think one of the things I'm looking to transition to in the future is to make live videos, so doing streams, but doing like live unboxing and reviews. So for example, if I buy a handheld and I don't want to spend 40 hours making a video on it, I could spend 2 hours live.
That's a great idea.
Like with everybody reacting with me as I like review it right there on the spot. And so it's a little bit more raw. Obviously I won't be able to give the perspective of, oh, and 2 weeks later I'm still playing it. But I will at least be able to give people an idea of the thing, you know, that I spent this money on, to be able to at least get a better idea of what it's all about without having to invest all that time into like that kind of top tier of review items. The other thing I've been doing too is that, you know, I get a lot of accessory companies like asking to send me things, controllers, batteries, you know, all these various things that kind of fit in the, you know, retro world, you know, things that are kind of still important to us to make sure everything's working nicely. I've stopped really making dedicated videos like, hey, here is a video on this controller. I'll do it every once in a while, you know, especially if it's something that excites me. But what I do instead is say, oh, and lately I've been using this controller for this video that I'm already making. And so I like integrate it in. It's not being paid. It's not like the company's paying me to make that video. Like you see those commercials within a video. I don't do any of that stuff, but it's just a way for me to be like, say, okay, I got this one off my plate. I've talked about how I use this thing and I didn't have to make a dedicated video on it. And so that's one of the other things, is just kind of integrating that experience into my experiential review. And so that's another thing that I've been doing to kind of keep the topics going while still kind of maintaining my own sanity, you know. And it's harder because I know if somebody is searching specifically for that controller, they may not find that video on YouTube, but it still reaches a pretty fair audience. So
I think in your defense, I think you have the experience now. You know, you've been doing this for long enough, you've seen countless devices, and so to just sit and talk about something, I think your audience would enjoy that, you know, just to hear Russ live talking about the thing. So yeah, I think that's a great idea. Great, Russ. Thanks so much for doing this with me. You know, you have 300,000 subscribers. I have 8,500 subscribers. You really didn't have to do this, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I mean, just keep impressing us with your incredible work ethic, because it keeps us all in line.
You know, it's been my pleasure. I really appreciate you having me on. I saw, you know, like I mentioned, you know, I saw that other interview with Shem, and I and a little part of me was just like, man, this is fun. Like I watched the whole thing. I enjoyed watching it. And I was like, and a part of me was like, oh man, I kind of want to do it myself, you know? And so when you invited me, I immediately was like, yes, anytime. And so, I appreciate you having me on. It's a lot of fun. I don't ever get to pause like this and just kind of talk about the channel and how I got here and where I plan on going. And so I appreciate the opportunity. This is a lot of fun. Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, again, thanks for the opportunity, because I know that people are going to want to hear what you have to say, and so I appreciate it.